Welcome, welcome. We are here with another delicious episode of Navigating Mindfulness, where we talk about building our businesses, building a successful life by using personal growth tools. My name is Cheryl Sutherland, and I'm joined with my delicious co-host, the one and only Lisa McHale. And we have a guest here today. And I love playing with experts because, I mean, like, I feel like I learned so much even just having the conversation back and forth with between myself and Lisa. But bringing in a third party to bring their zone of genius, to bring their expertise here is always just so, I'm going to say delicious again. It is so delicious. So without further ado, I would love to introduce our guest, and her name is Rosanna Bakari, and she's actually from Philadelphia. So I'm going to have to talk about pizza later on. And she is an empowerment expert psychologist. She actually helps people master the relationship with themselves to master their lives. And this is, again, I'm really excited for the subject, I'm not gonna lie. And one of the best things about this is that if you enjoy the conversation that we get to have with her here, she has a radical new book on healing coming out in September. So September 3rd, set your clocks, set your alerts, call, like tell Siri to tell you the things. And this book is called The Healing Journey, Relationships and Wellness Daily Guide. Without further ado, hi.
Hello there. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited for this conversation. And yes, we definitely get to talk about Philly.
Definitely. The only thing I really know about Philly is like I dated a guy from there once and I don't know how big. So Dr. Bakari, how did you get into this magic? How did you get involved in this?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a real ziggly route. Like, I'm sure you know, talking to people in business, right? It's never like, well, I went to school for this and I got this job. And it's never that. It's all these squiggly lines. But part of it was through education and making my way up through the PhD. But I did work in the mental health field as a clinician, and I taught in higher education, and I took my own healing journey as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And ultimately, when I was teaching pre-service counselors how to become pre-service counselors, because that was my part of my teaching curriculum, I realized that we were leaving out a whole lot of information. And while I think there's so much usefulness to the traditional therapeutic methods, there's a difference between therapy and healing, is what I realized. Like, this is good therapy. You get someone to listen to you, help you process some feelings often. But what I realized is that we were not addressing empowerment. And so when you feel better, that doesn't mean you feel empowered. That there was a big difference between feeling better and feeling empowered to actually take charge of your life. And you guys, I'm sure, have many conversations about that around business. Business is about when you are in business, you have to be empowered, feeling good, because you may come in feeling good, but you get those rejections, then you need some empowerment. Feeling good is not, nobody's trying to get you to feel better. People are like, no, but you have to feel empowered to ask people to buy something from you, to listen to you, to help you create something. That takes empowerment way beyond I feel okay about myself, because you can feel okay about yourself when you walk in that door or before you make that first call or fill out that grant, and then you get those rejections back. Because when you're in business, right, that's, you got to prepare yourself for some rejection, and your feeling good can disappear periodically. And so what I realized is that for many people who were taking this healing journey, we'd get surprised when we start feeling good, but not a whole lot in our lives changed. And so I started working on my own theory around that and practice around that. And so I developed actually what I'm now sort of coining as curriculum therapy or curriculum help seeking, where we actually master empowerment, not just feeling good. So then you can create the life that you want.
That's amazing, Dr. Bakari. I'm so grateful that we're having this discussion, because a lot of it starts with the mindset, right? So yes, you can be prompted by therapy. You can be given the tools for therapy. However, I think what you're leading into is the application of the therapy and the journey that you do on your own. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
Yes, right. A lot of times when we, and part of what the book is about is this idea that the reason why many people, I'll say, go into therapy is because some relationship starts falling apart. We don't know something's not working until there's conflict that we can no longer manage, right? And then we go to therapy, usually get the therapist to try to tell us how to fix the other person. Right. And then the magic happens because we know that that's not what really works. And so the book is really about, if you can understand that every relationship is really a relationship with yourself, and every relationship that you're having with another person is a reflection of everything that's going on inside of you, then the world looks different and you can start to create something. When we stop trying to change everything externally and really start focusing on what's happening internally, this amazing thing happens. But it's like we say, trust the process. That part is true, whether you're talking about therapy or relationships, whatever. You do have to trust the process, because it's counterintuitive to say, what do you mean I need to change myself to get this person to do right, you know, or to get these people to notice me? But that is the truth. When you start refiguring in your head and in your heart what's really going on, then the world really looks different and your relationships start to change.
I love that. Cheryl and I often talk about being reflections to one another and how, you know, every relationship is really a mirror of what you are experiencing and what you're going through. So thank you I'm excited to see the curriculum and the guide that you put together for this, because it's going to be fun for a lot of people and maybe not so fun for some others.
One of the things that we talk about a lot, and I'm definitely a proponent of, is that all of your power comes from within, right? So when you change the way that you see yourself, when you take that back, and instead of allowing other people to have like responsibility for things that are going on, and you really decide, you know what, I'm the one that creates my universe. I'm the one that creates my reality. I'm the one that chooses to respond or react to certain things. It makes such a difference in your life, and you're able to go after the things that you want. So for you, you have like you have a huge resume, and it's amazing, like the things that you've accomplished, like even at such a young age. Now, with all of those things, do you feel like there was a certain point or there was a certain practice that helped you do this mindset shift of bringing that power internally versus externally? Or do you feel like you always kind of ran from this internal power system?
You know, that's an interesting question. I have always felt an internal power system. I've always felt it. I've always questioned from a very early age the ways in which the world did not make sense to me. What people were saying to me was not matching up with what I was seeing in the world. That always bothered me. It just always bothered me. And so I always had this internal sense of something, there's something more. However, I was also for a very, very long time, very connected to the misperceptions or the misinformation that I was being fed. So it really wasn't until I was in my mid 40s, I'm not that young, I was in my mid 40s, till I began to really confront those differences. Like, I noticed them for a very long time, but it took me a long time to actually confront the differences. And one was when I started living openly, or that's when I started living openly as a survivor of childhood sexual abuse. And everything changed when I stopped hiding. Everything in my life changed when I stopped hiding. Pursue the truth that I had been ignoring and hiding. So that's what the change was for me. It's like, ooh, if I'm going to be my, it's like, ooh, I'm going to be myself. And then you're like, oh, who is that? You know, then I go on a journey to figure out who that is. And now it turns out to be a beautiful journey. It wasn't at first, because it's like, ooh, well, that hurts. Ooh, well, that's ugly. Ooh, was that, ooh, why was I hiding that? Ooh, let's try to hide that. So there's all these oohs and ahs that don't really feel good. And then you get to a point where you ease into, okay, I don't really know exactly who I am, but I'm no longer all the pain that I was trying to hide.
That's really, really, really beautiful. I'm part of a book club that meets on Saturdays, and we're also looking into another book called Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. And one of the anchoring statements is your values, right? And so throughout your journey, I'm wondering if that's also included in your curriculum of like getting grounded, because you're right. When you're in the healing process, anything can happen, because a lot of the beliefs that you might have might actually not be yours. They're things that you made up as a result of dealing with, like in your case, trauma, right? So what is the real truth? And just hardlining it at, you know, one or two values to really get clear on how you're going to react or be in a particular situation is super important. So is there anything like that in your curriculum? Can you give us an inside scoop?
Yes, it's really about helping us. My role in when I'm working with clients and in the book is to like sort of dare people to respond to questions that they didn't think they would ever be asked about themselves. In the world, like there's a lot of expectation for conformity. And so we walk around, like you said, with all these sort of pat answers and pat responses. We already know what we're going to say in a conversation about this or about that. We know how to navigate and move. These are conversations we're not supposed to talk about: religion, sex, money. And so we have these two or three pat answers, right? And then when I work with people, my expertise is to ask them questions they haven't yet developed pat answers for about themselves. This is why it's so different than therapy. Therapy, you go in and you talk to the therapist about what you want the therapist to know, right? Which is very different than someone saying, here's a list of emotional defenses. I want you to tell me, and we do some activities that make it more structured, but at the same time, it's like, okay, given this list, I want you to tell me how you're living your life according to emotional defenses. It's no longer a choice, right? Like emotional defenses exist. I want you to tell me how you are living your life according to these emotional defenses. Then people are answering questions without having to make themselves look good, because I've already set them up to just be in truth. Versus if I say, well, what happened in your relationship? And you start telling me it from your position, right? Then, so that's my job, is to ask the questions, frame the questions in a way that allows you room to tell the truth, right? Instead of these pat answers that we carry around for ourselves. So that's one example, you know, talking about how, because a lot of the stuff that we do, it's natural and normal for social creatures, but it's not useful or productive, and it doesn't help us grow. It helps us get along in community. Very, very different. So we pick up patterns that help us get along in communities. We don't develop patterns naturally to help us grow into our most authentic selves. And so, yeah, I ask a lot of questions: defense mechanisms, why it's so hard, learning about cognitive dissonance. As therapists and practitioners, we know all these things that make people empowered. We just don't teach them. I don't know why. That's not traditional therapy. So what if we just laid out and said, oh, you know, if you can get a hold of these 10 concepts and ideas, you're going to be able to do a lot of this work for yourself, versus coming to me for the next 20 years with me listening to you, but never really giving you the bait for you to fish yourself. Like, I'll just take you fishing. I'll never teach you how to fish. So it's
a little bit. I love that. And so I am a huge journaling fan. Anybody that knows me knows, like, I mean, I obviously sell journals. So like, it's a thing. I'm not only a member, I'm the president. But one of the big things that I know is in confronting a lot of these thought processes and kind of rewiring things, one of the modalities that I love using is journaling. So do you have a favorite modality that you could advise people to use to support them in changing their thought processes and bringing their power back within themselves? And then also, do you have like perhaps like a couple prompts or exercises that you like to use in that context as well?
Yes. So journaling works in some situations. It works a lot, but there are a lot of situations in which it does not work well, particularly for people who have survived trauma, because we have a tendency already to replay. So we keep writing what went wrong and what happened. And it's really difficult to get us out of that loop. So journaling is not necessarily the most effective. So what I do with my clients, and it's part of the curriculum at some point in the curriculum, is that they have to write a poem, because again, their mind hasn't already prepped for that. When you journal, you tend to develop patterns. I stopped journaling maybe about 4 years into it, because one day I went back in my journal and it's like, I literally couldn't tell if I wrote this today, yesterday, or 3 years ago. It was just the same. Every time I wrote, it was the same old stuff. Who was getting on my nerves? Why they couldn't do what I wanted them to do? Blah, blah, blah. It was the same. When I started writing poetry, if you look at my poetry from when I started writing it 15 years ago to now, it's like you could just literally every step of the way see the progression of where I was. Because when you journal, you're giving your version of the truth. When you write poetry, you're giving your version of part truth, part what I want it to be, part what I hoped it would be, part what I see in the future. Like, there's no limits. And so it's so much more vast, because you're not stuck with writing what you believe is the truth. When you write a poem, it doesn't matter what's true or what's not true. All you're doing is really capitalizing on the feelings that come up. And that's where the healing really is, not in whether or not something is true or untrue, but how are you processing, what is the feeling that's attached to all that stuff. So I really like writing poetry as an attempt. And people are always surprised at their own ability to write a poem. People are like, I've never written a poem before. That's even better, right? So you just sit down and you see what comes out. And one of the ways that we do that is with what we refer to as a swim, where you literally just set the timer for 2 minutes. You maybe flip a page or a coin or whatever. You get a writing prompt, and for 2 minutes, you just write down everything that comes to your mind. Like, the rule is you cannot stop writing for 2 minutes. I also do this with the mirror. So you can do it with the writing prompt. You can do it with the mirror. So they're two different activities. Stare in the mirror at yourself for a complete minute, like set the alarm on your clock, do the timer. 1 minute, just stare directly at yourself in the mirror. Stop staring when the timer goes off. And then for the next 2 minutes, literally just write down everything that comes to your mind. And if you can't come up with something, then you write, what I'm trying to say is, and you write that until the next sentence comes. But the rule is, just don't stop writing. Under no circumstances are you allowed to stop writing, right? And so those are two activities, one with the writing prompt, two with the mirror. So, cause you're just really trying to access what's inside, and don't become overly attached to the truth. And again, for people who have some stuff that we haven't dealt with, that's where we get stuck in our loop of trying to understand the truth. So just try, as opposed to trying to understand, because you start to see things that you didn't even know were there.
I just want to jump in, and I know that you're a doctor and all that. I'm just going to speak from my personal experience. I journal a lot. And I have, I think it's what you described in one of your two other exercises as like this cathartic writing after you've been given a prompt, that free flowing, whatever it is, whether it's truth, a story I'm making up, something that I'm envisioning. Like, so for example, in the upcoming weeks, I'm doing like a 4-hour journaling only of vision things that I might want to do 2, 5, 10 years from now. So I'm not saying I wouldn't try the poetry. I'm not going to agree with journaling doesn't work, because I think we're saying the same thing, that again, cathartic writing, journaling prompts, getting out whatever your truth might be, is another way of expressing, just like poetry. That's my experience. but
I didn't know. I know journaling does work. I didn't say journaling doesn't. No, journaling does work.
That's what I heard.
Yeah,
sorry, I heard journaling doesn't work. And I stopped journaling, and I was like, my face just went, that's not my truth. I'm about to disagree with our guests, but welcome to Navigating Mindfulness.
This is thank you for disagreeing with that. No, journaling does work.
Okay.
So clear the air. Journaling doesn't work for everyone is what I said.
Right.
And
okay.
One of the reasons specifically why it often doesn't work with those of us who have a history of trauma in particular is because we have a tendency to have a difficult time getting out of this loop. And so we often, like what you're saying, like these healing, like these prompts that give people a different place to go. Like those are more like healing journaling prompts, which is different than every day I'm going to sit down and write what happened, or every day, I'm going to sit down and write how I feel. And so you get into a pattern of just, you state, there's nothing to pull you out of that loop. But whenever you're given a prompt, it's an opportunity, right, to get out of that loop.
Okay,
so
thank
journaling
you.
Journaling is really effective, but there are some instances where it's not effective for everyone, particularly for people if they have trauma and they're just writing down the trauma.
Right. So the different
consequences of the trauma.
For sure. It's kind of like, and I love that you said this because I feel like there's a misconception, I guess, around journaling where it's just like writing in a diary, like it's diarizing.
Exactly.
Detaching yourself from the actual incident and writing about how you feel about the incident, what you want to create with moving forward, your manifestation process, you know, all of that sort of stuff versus diarizing. So like, that's awesome. So I definitely agree with you that if you're doing a diarizing process, that if you're not healed from, or if you're not in a good place in regards to your trauma or a particular incident, it can actually be like you said, it'll get you in the loop and it's really harmful for you, or it's not as helpful for you as what you want moving forward. Or even, you know, if you're in a space of healing, being able to go through that situation and be like, okay, well, what was a good thing, or what is the benefit that happened? How did I change as a result of this incident? Not talking about the incident itself,
right,
but how did I grow? How did I transform? How am I more powerful as a result of moving through and living through? How can I give to other people as a result of living through this event? So like, there's just so much goodness in there. And I love that you even brought in poetry. I haven't even practiced with like haikus and stuff like that in so long. And I think that's one thing that's super fun is like, we can still do the work and it not be difficult and not be hard. We could bring a level of playfulness. We could bring this level of excitement to it that not only makes it, I feel like there's like a more of a buy-in to do it versus, you know, I have to do this. A lot of that mindset stuff around it and really setting yourself up for success. So I love the way that this conversation just kind of evolved as well.
Yes.
Definitely.
I need that word. I got to take that word diarizing, because that is the difference. That is the difference. So now I have a new word to describe it.
You never know what you're going to get here. You never know what you're going to get here. Shall we pivot a little bit? Like, I want to say thank you for telling us about your book and the course and giving us the inside scoop. But you've talked about a few different things, like you're a therapist, you're an author, you are also a professor. You wear a lot of hats. Can you tell us about the different, like some of the other hats that you wear to start? And then we'll see where we go from there.
Okay. Yes. I am a poet. I also am a poet. I do spoken word. I am also, which is a real huge passion of mine. I'm also a fourth degree black belt, and I run for life. I run, I am a prolific runner, hoping to do my third and last marathon within the next couple of years. And I'm a mom, and my husband and I will be celebrating our 30th anniversary this year. So those are some of the other fun hats that I wear. And I have a nonprofit organization for adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. So yes, lots of hats.
Very, very cool. because you've tried so many different things, like, are you ever afraid of not meeting the expectation or like not hitting the marker or outright failing?
Yes, I'm not afraid, but I'm sometimes anxious and have to bring myself back. And what's interesting, I've been married for 30 years, and my husband also has a PhD. In fact, we earned them at the same time. And he's taken really good care of me, financially, emotionally. And so I'm really spoiled. And when you're spoiled, it's even more challenging to make a goal. Cause it's like, well, what if I don't sell a book? I still get to eat. I mean, you know, like there's never anything writing on the line for me. And because of that, I really only have my own sense of purpose that drives me. Sometimes that's harder. Sometimes that's harder when you have, there's such thing that I think as being, is like having so much cushion to fail that you don't try your hardest. And so sometimes coming and making and doing the extra effort to make sure I succeed is my biggest challenge, because I feel like I always have an out. And so I've done a lot of things. Most of the things that you hear me say, I've done, they have not required me to interact with people a whole lot. Like, I am very much into these independent challenges. And so, for example, starting my business over the last couple of years and being successful at entrepreneurship, as you know, requires a lot more engagement. And that actually has been one of the most challenging pieces for me, because again, it's, I can go away and hide. It's like, do I want to do this? Like, do I have to do this? And so that's a huge part of my own growth. It's really easy for me to do stuff by myself. But when I was told, in fact, I cried, literally I cried, because I was told that I would not, this woman looked at me, she said, you will not reach your goals if you don't learn how to engage. I was like, she was like, you can't. She was like, you can't go any further. She's like, you've done some amazing things. If you don't learn how to engage with people, you will never get where you're supposed to go. And so that's probably what I'm like, am I going to get there? Do I need to, so that's my fear factor. And doing things by myself, tell me what to do, where it is, how many tests I need to take, and I'm fine. But I'm always more intimidated by how to do it with someone else. So, which is also common for survivors.
Definitely. I know for myself, independence can be terribly misconstrued with like not trusting. And I don't want to say terribly misconstrued. It's like part of two sides of the same coin, right? Like when I was younger, one of the biggest things that kept coming up for me was I would trust people, but I would expect them to fail me. So then it was just easier if I just did things on my own. It was easier if I didn't delegate. And that's actually been one of the biggest hindrances to my growth in business, because I have difficulty, and I am actively working on it. Communicating to other people, like how I want things done, or can you do this instead, or all of these different things. And I notice that I'll get frustrated and I'll clam up, and then I'll just either do it myself or kind of just get frustrated and be like, okay, well, whatever, it doesn't matter anyway. So this is something that I feel like is really important, especially when it comes to relationships. You've got your relationship with yourself, which again is bringing that power, bringing that back to you. However, it seems like a really great opportunity for growth. And I'm going to speak as per my experience, is like really building that relationship with others, allowing ourselves to be vulnerable and asking for what we want and letting people support us. And then I think even in that same context, like understanding that like all the businesses, everything that you need in life in order to be successful is not built on your own. You have like a team of people, you're delegating to people, you're asking people for help, you're asking people to share. Like, I'm doing another Kickstarter, it's coming up soon, and I'm going through the process of like pulling teeth as I'm asking people like, hey, yeah, would you buy this? And hey, yeah, would you be willing to share it? So I love noticing an opportunity for growth and actively choosing to run towards it and, you know, set really fun goals to help me overcome these things, help me move through these things. So for you, I guess my next question would be, if you have something in regards to like building relationships with other people, like that difficulty in delegating and, you know, relying on other people, what would be your number one tip or like mindset tip, mantra or something to hold inside one's head that will allow them to open up and allow them to trust and be vulnerable and be open with the people that they want to build relationships with?
Thank you for asking that. I do this with my clients. But I do it with them because this is what has helped me the most, if there's one thing. And that is that I finally, once you recognize this potential to not reach out and not ask for help and this fear of being let down or whatever. So ultimately that's going to create some sort of failure in you, really. So ultimately that's the fear, like this fear of failure kind of thing, or fear of rejection, right? And so I got to the point where literally on my calendar, I would write down at the end of the week, how many opportunities did you give yourself to fail? That was the question. Like, how many opportunities did you give yourself to fail? And so if all I've done were the things that I do all the time that I'm really comfortable with, really good at, I wrote another poem, wrote another article, I posted on Instagram, I did all these good things for the business, but I did not do anything where I risked rejection or failure. So literally my goal became choose 10 opportunities this week, 10 things you're gonna do that may result in rejection or failure. Like, the goal is literally to keep going until you get at least X number of rejections or failures. So that's how I got myself out of it. So the goal is, as opposed to this idea that, well, trying to get it right. Like, no, I'm not trying to get it right. I'm actually trying to get it wrong. I'm actually trying to do things that I think I'm going to get wrong. I'm going to try to do things that I might mess up. And if I give myself that leeway to begin with, then when it happens, I don't feel that, you know, that it's crisis because somebody said no or didn't work out. It's like, oh, right. You get to count that. So then it's like this reverse psychology, like, yay, you failed. Give yourself a check. Look what you did. You're a big girl. You failed and you got a chance to do it again. And so I had to use that sort of reverse psychology on myself where the goal was to fail. And allow myself to feel that and know that, look, you're still alive. You're still breathing.
Yeah. I think it's really important even in business to create a space, like a work environment that where people can fail, right? Like make mistakes, right? So I think, I don't know if I would keep going for the failure to make it okay. Is fine for me. And also part of that is also the acknowledgement of the working hard, like doing your best is that I think is also part of the creating a new normal or a new expectation or creating a supportive environment where one will thrive and understand that growth and learning is a continuum. It doesn't stop just because you've reached a certain age. That encouragement factor, I think, is a big part of the healing process also, that the world and the universe shows up to support you in that way.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny because even a couple episodes, we were talking about marketing and like my issues with asking for support and talking to people. And I got so fed up. I'm like, let's just have a journaling activity about like, why is this such an issue? Because obviously, I know what I want. What is the outcome? What is the success that I desire? However, why am I blocking myself? Is this just not my zone of genius? And checking in with myself and saying, like, is that true or is that false? No, I've won awards for sales. So, like, let's remix this. Like, what is it about that that's blocking me? And then I had to have that conversation with myself about the ways that I choose not to value myself, the ways that I choose not to see myself the way that other people see me, the evidence that I have not chosen to look at how great, you know, my products and services are, how great of a difference that I'm making in other people's lives. And I think going through those processes really helped me change the way that I felt about outgoing sales, so much so that I went from, you know, reaching out to 10 people a week to reaching out to 10 people a day. Like, it just made it so much easier and the flow so much easier as well. And then I also love your opportunities to fail. I actually love contextualizing failure as an opportunity for growth. Like, this is just another opportunity for me to just be the most amazing version of myself. And I think when we play with the way that we see things, like, I love going forward and doing things that are scary on a frequent basis, because I know, oh, look at me, I'm sharpening my tools. I'm getting better at this. Like, I'm going to be like a magician at this soon. And people are going to be like, hey, Cheryl, how do you do this? And I'm like, soon, right? But it's all about practice and it's all about flow. And also, I think even reaching out for support when it comes to things that do feel sticky, that do feel icky, because there's a reason that that's there. Like, that's a clear indicator of a misbelief that you have. So what do you do about it? Are you going to keep skirting around it, or are you going to have that conversation about it? I love it.
Oh. Same. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because the truth is, if we knew everybody was going to say yes, like, we'd be out there, right? So it's really about right? What if? So it's like, the outcome is not I take the outcome off the table, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. There's a personal development course lesson that was don't be attached to the outcome. It's about the process, right? Like, you mentioned a marathon earlier. I remember doing a 60 kilometer walk in Toronto, and it wasn't the finishing of the 60K on the 2-day weekend. It was the months leading up to that, to be able to train. Yeah. And the experiences and the conversations and, you know, like trying on new clothes and breaking them in and all of that leading up to that weekend that really was more impactful than the actual weekend. Mm-hmm. Right. So failure, lessons, area for growth. Gotta love it.
Yes.
Okay. So there is one more thing that I did want to touch on, because this is actually one of my favorite things. So I'm very clear that we come to this earth hashtag amazing. Like, we are all complete, that we are all perfect. And we have so many just different opportunities to grow, kind of like what we shared today. And one of the things that actually you indicated that I thought was so interesting is talking about the fact that there's nothing wrong with you when it comes to, like, the new clients that you have come in. And I think this is really important, because even when you were talking about the difference between, like, a therapist and healing, right? Like, therapists are like, okay, yeah, let's assess what's wrong with you. Let's go through this. And, you know, there's been so many people, like, in different communities that aren't open to therapy because they feel like, mm-hmm. you know, therapists just want you to keep coming back. Right. So when we talk about the healing, when we talk about that, there is nothing wrong with you and that you're perfect and whole and complete, and this is just the opportunity for you to learn that. Tell me a little bit more about your approach with your clients when we get into this, when they start working with you.
Thank you. So everything is fairly flexible. Like, we start here, does this fit? We start there, does that fit? So clients always have input into everything because it's their work, and I want them to be empowered from the beginning. The only thing I ask them to accept, I say, here's the only thing that's not negotiable. And that is that in order to work together, I need you to accept that there's nothing wrong with you. And I go, well, why am I here? I said, we're here to introduce and find your most beautiful, authentic self. That's why we're here. We're not here to fix you. We're here to find aspects of you that may be missing or misplaced or covered or whatever. And so I'm constantly reminding them, like, there's nothing wrong with you, but we live in a world that is always telling us that there's something wrong with us, always, right? We're too much of this and not enough of that, right? Too soon for this, too late for that. It's not the right time. So once we accept that there's nothing wrong with you, then when we explore, hopefully there's greater space for truth to evolve, because everybody wants to have a good self-impression management. And if you believe that there's something wrong with you, it's gonna block our work together, because you're trying to hide that even from yourself. And so when we accept there's nothing wrong with you, everything that we look at is for your benefit to grow and introduce and help you find your most authentic self. That means we get to look at systems, because if we start with the fact that there's something wrong with you, first of all, we don't even get to look at the systems around you. We're just looking at you. So because I know there's nothing wrong with you, we get to look at the systems around you, family systems, social system, cultural systems, religious systems, because all those have had an impact on who you've become. So we look at that. And so we go from outside to inside, right? Because see, what is it that you're responding to? All the things that you become is because you're responding to this or responding to that. And so we take a look to see it. What are you responding to? And how do those responses prevent you from being your most beautiful, authentic self? Because if the other piece of that is, if you use the information that comes up, if you find out that, oh, I do a lot of projection with people and that's my main defense, blah, 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 I must be a horrible person. Soon as you use the information to beat up on yourself, your brain will jump in and stop you from receiving information, because your brain's job is to protect you even from yourself. And so most people say, oh, I'm so hard on myself. It's like, yeah, kind of, sort of, but your brain won't even allow you to see the truth of who you are. Because if you are harder on yourself, some people think that that's a good thing. I'm my worst enemy. I'm so hard on myself. When you do that, your brain has to protect you from yourself, and you can't even see the truth of who you really are. And so it's only if we allow the information to be used properly that the brain will allow us to see who we really are. But if you're using the information to beat up on yourself, your ego will come in and start defending you. You'd be like, but, and the buts just push you further away from yourself, as opposed to, yeah, I use this defense and this is what happens when I use it. Oh, I don't want that to happen. I could try something different. Oh, there's another door. But as soon as you start being negative with it, then you start to close yourself off.
I love that. And like, I'm in my head, I'm scribbling notes. I'm not actively scribbling notes. Why? Because we have a replay that I'm going to watch again. But this is something that I feel like is super important to touch on. I'm also one who used to be really, really hard on myself. And it also comes down to like the fact that, you know, back in the day, I used to like to judge myself before other people could judge me to avoid X, Y, and Z. You know, like there's a whole bunch of stories around that. However, one of the big things that you touched on is like you have to be able to learn what your triggers are or learn how you process things so you can recognize it and choose to do something different. I know my default in my brain is to be hard on myself, and therefore I actively look out for evidence of the opposite. So as of late, I've actually been doing a plethora of different marketing meetings. How do I say? I've been doing some market analysis. I've been talking to people about my brand and like what they like, what they don't like, et cetera, right? Market research. Like, I like how I can figure out words eventually. However, one of the big things is coming from a non-biased place of like, these are people that don't necessarily know me, they know the brand, and then I'm able to get appropriate feedback that I can internalize. And I had to actively work on, okay, yes, this is something that is true. yes, this is something that is true, and actively absorbing the praise that I'm getting and allowing myself to recognize it and allow it to soak in, because this is something that I want. This is what I want, is the truth. And so I'm actively rewiring my brain to look at the evidence and absorb it versus, you know, evidence that I'm not doing well. It normally hits really hard, or it hits in a different way and it absorbs in a different way, that evidence that I'm doing a great job, that like I'm valued and valuable. And that's why I'm I'm in love with this conversation. And I'm also so in love with talking about evidence and absorbing the evidence and steeping in the evidence that you are in fact the person that you wish to be. And now we have the opportunity to just keep moving forward with that. So I love all of this. So we are about to wrap up everything today. This has been such a delicious conversation. Dr. Bakari, do you have any last words for the audience before we depart today?
One is that recognizing that there's nothing wrong with you, and take that into your everyday existence. And instead of trying to fix you, if we can change the mindset to growth, not fix. Like, what do I need to do to grow today? Not how do I fix myself? So I'll take that. And other than that, just look for the book and support. Of course, check me out on rosinabakari.com as well. But please support the book when it comes out. Get one for you and your friend, because it's going to be, I think, a really useful tool for people to meet them where they are on a healing journey.
Look at you reaching out and asking for support and working. Live growth right here in the podcast. There's actually something that just popped up for me that I would love to share as well, is that successful people are always looking for more ways to become more successful. So if you are seeking out help, whether it's working with a professional, whether it's working with a therapist, whether it's working like on an online course or something, it's because you are choosing to step into the fact that you can be more, that you in fact are more, and you're just unlearning a lot of the things that are not true for you. So if you want to be a successful person, well, if you want to step into the successful person that you already are, you are on the right track, not only by being here, but working with amazing people like the three delicious people on this podcast. Yes. So with that, that is today's episode. Thank you so much for being with us here, Dr. Bakari. My name is Cheryl Sutherland, and again, joined by my gorgeous co-host, the one and only Lisa McHale. And come back next week. We'll be here. You'll get more goodness. Make sure you visit all of Dr. Bakari's social sites. And then, of course, pick up her book. It's launching, dropping, moving, available September 3rd on all platforms. So with that, have an amazing day and say yes to you.